Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Caritas. Today is Saturday, April 18th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. Wanted to make sure that I did a podcast this evening because I took the day off yesterday because I had to take a mental day because I've been doing quite a bit of reading on what's taking place here, obviously, in this country from an economic standpoint, a financial standpoint, but then trying to understand also what's actually in some of these bills that have been passed. That are monstrosities. As far as I'm concerned, they're illegal, they're unconstitutional, they are destroying the fabric of this country, but the people at the helm are quote-unquote elected leaders, and I use leaders very loosely. They're just destroying this country. So that's why the title of today's podcast is America, the Final Chapters. Chapters plural, I don't know, maybe it should be singular, maybe it's already over, and I know there are many, many people out there who study this stuff to a greater extent than I do, especially on the social side of things, that could make a very articulate and eloquent argument that America has long, long been gone. And I would have to agree with them on a number of fronts. But that's the title of today's podcast, America, the Final Chapters. We'll see how long we keep this podcast here this evening. I do want to cover, obviously, the market performance on Friday. The Federal Reserve's balance sheet, when we did our podcast on Thursday, that's when they typically update their weekly number when it comes to the balance sheet. They did not do so. I did come across later on a memo or a message from the Federal Reserve saying that there was going to be a slight delay in the production of that number. Can't they count that high? I mean, what the hell? A couple hundred billion, you've been doing it for decades. What's the problem now? I mean, it's highly doubtful that these people are shameful of anything. They don't care. So they couldn't count that high, I guess. So they needed a few more hours, another day to get it. But we do have that number, so we're going to talk about that here briefly. States, of course, are continuing to line up. Everybody is lining up for more bailouts. One of the ones that is extremely laughable is the state of Illinois coming to the federal government basically asking for $40 billion and citing a whole bunch of things, especially their pension plan, which is it's just disastrous. One of the worst from an unfunded liability standpoint in the country. Asking for $40 billion, and a lot of that money is supposed to be, you know, sanctioned or set aside for the pensions, in addition with a handful of other things. You know, how convenient, isn't it? All of these problems, the unfunded liabilities from the state of Illinois and a whole host of other states, it's not just Illinois, I'm not just singling out Illinois here, but that was one of the articles I came across for Illinois asking for $40 billion. You know, this goes to my point with, in my letter, Representation and Recourse. If you haven't checked it out, find it on thecapitalnews.com. It's worth the time. Use it as your own. Send it to your congressmen, your senators. Keep my name on it if you wish. And please do so. Not because I want credit, just because I want these idiots to know we're coming after them. I'm sick and tired of these people. We got to stand up for something here because nobody's saying a damn word. It's partisan politics or it's absolutely, yeah, just give them a bailout, just give them a bailout. And then it has to be somewhat on their terms, which we're going to talk about a little bit here today on from a Forbes article in relation to the airline bailout. We're a couple days behind on that one, but it really makes no difference because this podcast, it's not about breaking news. It's about having a conversation with what's taking place in the economy, what's taking place in the markets, what's taking place from a political standpoint as well. So one of the things that I was highlighting and drilling home in that letter, Representation and Recourse, was a litany of issues in this country that began well before the onset of COVID-19, well before. And now it makes no difference here because they're just as shameless in the state of Illinois as they are in Washington, D.C. and every other Capitol House for $40 billion to help them bail out their pension funds. Oh, well, you know, we were doing great and then COVID-19 came and then all of a sudden we're unfunded. Don't buy into this BS. But they're all going to start lining up, all of them. I want to talk a little bit about Boeing, because they're supposed to be opening production up next week, which was a huge catalyst, a huge news headline for their stock on Friday, and it just catapulted. But we have some interesting questions as to why are they picking up production, because there's some of that tied into the Forbes article, so we'll get to that here in a little bit. People are starving to death. There's food lines, food shortages. There's obviously the locust outbreak, which is getting worse if you've been continuing to follow any of that. I know you don't hear a lot of that in the news, but I do continue to follow it. And now we are on swarms of locusts in Africa and the Middle East that are now 20 times larger than the original. And it was bad to begin with. So now it's 20 times larger. People are starving to death. And we have farmers in this country who are destroying food. I saw a video of one farmer who was destroying about $1 million worth of lettuce in the field. In the field. It's not as if this was picked and packaged and had nowhere to go and it's spoiled on the shelf. No, this was in the ground, drove a tractor over it, and destroyed $1 million worth of lettuce. We have people starving in this country. You've seen the lines, food banks, people in their cars waiting for hours to get fed in the United States of America. And we have people starving the world over to the tunes of millions of people. We got farmers destroying food. You can't make this stuff up. And then just the other day, the federal government announces to the United States Department of Agriculture that they're going to be buying food and they're going to be giving more billions and billions of dollars to farmers and ranchers. I mean, this is very reminiscent to some degree of what took place during the Great Depression. Now, many liberal economists would have you believe that but for government and but for FDR and all of those huge policies, we never would have gotten out of the Great Depression, which is laughable because it was all of those policies that prolonged a recession that turned into the Great Depression. Okay? People just like to regurgitate what they hear. They have these things called books. If you actually go and look at one and read it, you can learn something else. And you can start to connect the dots and say, oh, well, wait a minute. Maybe I was fed a bunch of baloney. You know why? Because that story of big government bailouts and programs helping everybody, who do you think that serves? That's right. It serves the interest of government. But for us, you would have been suffering even more. You know what the geniuses did in the 1930s? Because back then, folks, this country, like so many other countries, especially when they're developing, are highly agricultural. All right? And the farmers and ranchers become very powerful because they're a huge voting bloc. All right? Even today, and most people are not employed by a farm or a ranch, farmers and ranchers are still a very, very powerful voting bloc. Very, very powerful lobbyists. And you have some very, very powerful senators and congressmen from states that are heavily tilted toward agriculture, and they carry a lot of weight. You understand what I'm saying here? Great Depression, food prices, in conjunction with so many other things, prices were falling, right? Well, we can't make any money. Prices are falling. We don't like it. So you know what the geniuses that the government came up with? They said, well, burn your crops. Burn your crops. What were they trying to do, ladies and gentlemen? They were trying to reduce the supply on the market, right? They were going to the fundamentals of economics. Econ 101, supply and demand. Well, let's get rid of some of the supply and then the prices will go up. You're in a Great Depression. Did you see the food lines? Did you see people starving to death? And these geniuses came up with the idea of burning food. I mean, these people, they never left. They never left. Just the faces and the names changed, and even that's to some degree. These are the people who are at the helm. You feel better? You understand the America, the final chapters? So don't believe the BS from government bureaucrats and proponents of all of these bailout programs and all of these big spending measures from the federal government as being some sort of panacea or saving grace of the 1920s, 1930s. It prolonged it, which is why I have been screaming on this podcast ever since this whole thing started, because we knew what was going to happen. We knew the bailouts were coming. We knew what was going to take place with moral hazard. All of it. No bailouts. Restructurings, bankruptcies, liquidations if need be. No more handouts. None of it. We're going down the same path as we did then. This is going to turn a big recession into a recession, perhaps the greatest depression. Again, more bailouts from the airlines, so we're going to get to that. Again, my letter, representation and recourse, I stated to this audience that I received a very generic response from my congressman. I just received a response from one of my two senators, also very generic. So nothing personalized, nothing specific to my concerns with a runaway, out of control federal government and Federal Reserve. Not a damn concern. So nothing. So again, I have no representation, which was the purpose of the letter, and they just proved it. Thank you very much. The rhetoric on COVID-19 with respect to China is starting to heat up a little bit. So this is something we want to keep in either the back of our minds or the front of our minds, whatever an interest it is to you. But I do believe once some of this dust settles a little bit and things start to finally calm down, which they inevitably will, you're going to hear some fired up rhetoric, I think, attacking China, not just from the United States, but from many, many other countries around the world, accusing them of lying and putting things under the rug, which of course they have. I don't make any excuses for China. I think we should stop doing business with them personally because of their human rights violations, their big brother state. But then again, I mean, you have to look at the United States too. We gotta clean up our own shirt before we start pointing the finger at everybody else. But you have to understand, these are the things that we have been warning about. When all else fails, they take us to war, okay? Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a hot, kinetic war between us and China. I hope that doesn't happen, but there could be, of course, biological war. There could be economic war. There could be cyber warfare, and I'm sure all of those things are taking place to some degree, especially the economic and the cyber. I hope this was just some sort of act of God or some sort of honest mistake from a lab that got out. But time will tell, and we'll never know the truth regardless, but we're going to be told one way or the other what's going to play out to justify whatever the powers that be want. That's what's going to take place, whether we like it or not. Weapons of mass destruction, it's a slam dunk, sir. No, they weren't there, okay? They're going to tell us what they want to hear. They're going to put us in our corners to make us sound more patriotic, and then we're going to go off and killing more people, all right? So just be ready for it. Be ready for it. And it could be proxy wars. Well, a couple big proxies? Who are they? Iran and Venezuela. Coincidental. We've been on this for months. Pay attention. So I have no representation, obviously, from the letter, and then I'm just saying, watch this stuff when it comes to the rhetoric around COVID-19. All right? So let's first get to, real quickly here, some of the market performance on Friday, just to get that out of the way. We have the Dow, the S&P 500, the NASDAQ 100 all up. The Dow, the S&P were up about 3 percentage points, and the NASDAQ 100 was up about 0.9%. Again, this was all carry through from the Gilead Science article and headline that came out saying that they're making some good progress, perhaps, potentially, with one of their drugs in response to COVID-19. Of course, if you continue to read, you would understand, as we noted on Thursday's podcast, that this is overblown. This is hype. We hope it becomes true, but there are a lot more tests that need to be conducted in order to have any type of really hopeful feeling that this is going to come through. But nevertheless, markets don't care. They rallied heavily on this, as did the Japanese markets, gaining 3%, and across the board over in Europe, up 2%, depending on the index. So it was a carry forward, pretty much all off of that news. Crude oil. Well, you would think fantastic news. There's a therapy, there's a vaccine, something's coming. You would think crude would rally, especially with 10 million barrels per day coming off production. No, that didn't happen. Didn't happen. Down 8%. WTI trading at $18.27. Brent, the international metric, at $28.08 a barrel. Natural gas at $1.76 per million British thermal units. Gold and silver continued to pull back. Gold was trading at $1,684 an ounce. Silver at $15 and about 20 cents per ounce. Uncle Sam's 10-year treasury note up slightly, 0.66%. So that's that. Now, real quickly to the Federal Reserve's assets. That's right, the asset side of the balance sheet. They couldn't count that high. They needed a few more hours to calculate it. But we got it, $6.367 trillion, up about $284, $285 billion over the course of the prior week. So you want to understand why the stock market has been rallying, has been taking off, is because they're printing money and that money's got to go somewhere. Not to benefit the average Joe and Jane. Oh, no, no, no. Oh, no. You have to bail out Wall Street. You have to bail out major corporations to the tune of trillions and trillions of dollars. Trillions. You get 1,200. They get trillions. Small businesses get $350 billion, which is already dried up. And of course, some of that money is going to hedge funds and private equity and even some larger businesses who are able to get in there and get a loan. So fantastic, fantastic. $6.367 trillion. I have no idea where this number is going to end up stopping when all is said and done. Their justification to buy junk bonds, investment grade bonds, ETFs, commercial real estate, residential real estate, of course, for mortgage-backed securities, U.S. Treasuries, because there is no buyer. We talked about that, I believe it was on Thursday. There are no buyers of U.S. Treasuries, not from foreigners, not from pension plans, not from individuals, nobody. So it's junk. Nobody wants it. That's junk by definition. What would also make it junk by definition is a higher interest rate, but the Federal Reserve's not allowing that to happen because they're buying it all up. Okay, according to Goldman Sachs, they're about to buy maybe about 60 to 70% of Uncle Sam's new issuance. 60 to 70%. It's like a banana republic. Nobody wants it. That's fantastic. Again, America, the final chapters. This is how they go down. No truth telling, no responsibility. President doesn't take responsibility. He said it himself. Buck doesn't stop with him. Stops with somebody else. I don't know who, but not him. That's where we are. So here's the Forbes article. This is, again, a few days old, but we just like to have a general discussion here. It's not about breaking news all the time. Airlines are being bailed out again. Here's what economists think will happen next. On Tuesday, 10 airlines told the Treasury Department they would take funds from a $25 billion bailout. They would take them. Congratulations. Yeah, $25 billion. Yeah, I think we'll take that. Oh, how nice of them to do. As the industry faces the looming threat of bankruptcy amid global travel limitations due to the coronavirus pandemic, that bailout is sparking an inevitable debate about moral hazard, which we've been all over here for weeks. And then they go on to cite moral hazard. When a business engages in riskier behavior because it's protected from the consequences and the future of the airline industry. The CARES Act, a $2 trillion federal stimulus package designed to keep the U.S. economy from sinking into a deep recession, includes roughly $25 billion for airlines. After some back and forth about the terms of an agreement, American Airlines, Delta, United, Southwest, and others agreed to take the money on the following conditions. Airlines will keep at least 90% of workers employed through September. They will return one-third of the funds they receive, suspend stock buybacks and dividends, oh, how nice of them, and limit executive pay. The concessions are greater than some airlines were hoping to make. You're getting bailed out, and these little babies are crying. They made out like criminals, buying back their stock, tunes of tens of billions of dollars over the past decade, enriched themselves, financially engineered their share prices higher, paid themselves huge compensation packages and bonuses, and they're still not happy. It's fantastic. With our money. It's not the government's money, it's our money. And don't forget, the government's broke. Great. The concessions are greater than some airlines were hoping to make, but the industry is struggling and access to cash is crucial as passengers avoid flying and demand refunds on previously booked flights. Aircraft occupancy is at dangerously low levels. Exactly 1 year ago, 2.6 million people passed through airport security on a single day. Yesterday, the TSA reported that just 95,000 people were screened and boarded a plane in the U.S. Both Boeing and the New York Stock Exchange ARCA Airline Index have fallen 60% since late February. And orders for more than 300 of Boeing's jets have been canceled this quarter. Do you hear that? More than 300 of Boeing's jets have been canceled this quarter. Hundreds of planes have been grounded, and United Airlines even said it would reduce its staff by 60% if government aid did not come through by the end of March. So a real quick aside, and then we're going to get through some more of this article. But in regards to Boeing, 300 planes have been canceled this quarter alone. So what are they picking up production for? What are they making? Could it be, and I came across this from somebody who commented on something else that I was reading, and I said, well, you know what? Sometimes it's where you get your best information. You just think outside of the box. People will say anything, comment sections, read them. Sometimes they're a waste of time, but sometimes, you know, you connect the dots a little bit. And I thought somebody made a very interesting observation. Simply when asked this question, posed about Boeing opening up production again next week, they said warplanes. They might be right. They might be right. When all else fails, take us to war. Boeing is right dab in the middle of the military-industrial complex. There's no doubt in my mind that we're going to be ending up fighting somebody somewhere. The war machine is getting ready to run. Make no mistake about it. I hope I'm 100% wrong, but I highly doubt it. And if they're not making warplanes, they might be making drones. Might be making drones for who? Maybe us. Not to attack us, but to watch us. Make sure everybody's staying home, complying with stay-at-home orders. Talk about a police state. Again, I hope I'm wrong on this too. But when you lose 300 planes, when airlines aren't operating, and this isn't just Airbus, or I'm sorry, this isn't just Boeing, this is Airbus as well, okay? With production cuts and all this stuff, what are they making? What are they making? So what's a rational thing? Maybe in some part, that could be it, having something to do with defense. Continuing with the article, despite the terms of the bailout, critics argue that airlines may be getting too much and giving up too little. Oh, you think? Nancy Rose, the economics department head at MIT, says bailouts need to include strict terms. Quote, to give the big carriers tens of billions with no strings is to subsidize capital that was very well compensated and imposes that cost on our kids and grandkids. The insistence on something like warrants or equity for cash infusions seems quite sensible, end quote. Treasury would receive warrants to buy stock in the airlines under the current terms of the bailout. So here we have it. The U.S. Treasury, meaning the U.S. government, is nationalizing part of the airline industry. This is unconstitutional. Nowhere in the Constitution does it give Congress the authority or the power to nationalize an industry, to bail them out, to give them loans. Anybody a loan? Nobody. Powers in the Constitution give Congress the power and the ability to borrow money. To borrow money. Not to lend it. Not to buy up companies and corporations. Don't you think if that was the case, don't you think if that was so crucial to the successful operation of our republic, that our founding fathers would have put such a provision in the Constitution? It's not there. It's not there, and it's not there for a reason. Because it's not supposed to be. Because that would destroy this country. It would basically have made Congress a king, in essence. Because, well, we want to bail out these people, picking winners and losers. Exactly what the government is not supposed to do. That's exactly what they're doing. On April 9th, Social Capital CEO, excuse my pronunciation of his name, Chamath Palihapitiya, went viral when he told CNBC that the government should not be giving handouts to Wall Street hedge funds or billion-dollar corporations, suggesting that it should give Americans more cash directly. Quote, what we've done is disproportionately prop up and protect poor-performing CEOs, companies, and boards, he says. Continuing, the point is that the bankruptcy process isn't set up to drive layoffs, but rather cleaning up balance sheets in corporate offices to get competent leaders in clean table in place to run a business. That's all it is, folks. It's all we've been arguing. This is such a simple tenet of free market capitalism. That's all it is. Get to work, restructure, renegotiate, get better managers in there. That's all we're talking about here. You file bankruptcy, those planes don't disappear. Those pilots don't disappear. They don't magically lose their skill set of knowing how to fly. Flight attendants don't disappear. Flight crews don't disappear. Grounds crews, everybody. All of those assets and infrastructure remains intact. Meanwhile, more than 200 top academics led by Jonathan B. Burke, a professor of finance at Stanford Graduate Business School, issued a public letter condemning Washington's plans to finance struggling corporations. Quote, it's outrageous. It's investors who are powerful and want to be bailed out. The letter calls on Congress to offer relief to people before it does so for corporations. Too late, Professor. Too freaking late. Corporations and Wall Street have already gotten trillions, and they're going to get trillions more. Investors knew when they made their investments that they would have to weather a storm or two. Not in this country, you don't, especially when you're well-connected. There is no risk. Gamble what you want. If you win, it's all yours. If you lose, we'll come bail you out, meaning us, the taxpayer. Continuing, Burke believes airlines should be allowed to go bankrupt. He argues that bailouts help equity investors like Vanguard and BlackRock, which both own large stakes in several airlines, but that Chapter 11 bankruptcy could keep airline workers employed while forcing the company to restructure debt. Quote, people confuse bankruptcy with liquidation, end quote, and they most certainly do. They most certainly do. It's not about liquidation. It's about restructuring. Restructuring your debts, restructuring agreements, and getting better management at the helm. That's all it is. And then the article continues about some historical precedent with you know, a lot of bankruptcies in the airline industry, which is sort of par for the course. Tough industry to begin with, although they were making quite a bit of money over the past decade, which explains, you know, some of their share buybacks and quantitative easing being one of the largest wealth transfers in the history of mankind. Corporate debt exploded. They didn't use it for capital expenditures and investment. They did it to financial engineer their share prices so that they can pay themselves handsomely. You know the game. They played it. They messed up, and now they're the ones that get bailed out, and you're going to get a check, if you're lucky, for $1,200, and sit down and shut up, because that's all it is. And these people aren't even grateful. I mean, that's one of the most disgusting things of the whole thing. At least if you could have somebody who would be a little bit humble. I mean, they weren't even happy with the concessions that they had to make, right? And now you're talking about this bailout only lasting through September. Well, what happens if there's a second wave with COVID-19 or something else? Then what? We going to bail them out again? Another $25 billion? I mean, you continue with this article. Some of these analysts, some of these economists still think that there's going to be at least one bankruptcy. One of them is just not going to be able to make it. And I 100% agree with that. 100% agree with that. Unless there's some really dirty, shady things going on behind the scenes, funneling money in. But other than that, there's going to be bankruptcies. Again, tip of the iceberg here. Tip of the iceberg. Despite trillions of dollars in printed money, trillions of dollars in promises, it's not enough, because they have done tens of trillions of dollars over the past decade. And when you multiply that with the pyramid scheme of fractional reserve banking that we have globally, well, that now you're talking hundreds of trillions, if not quadrillions, when you're talking about options, all of those derivatives, whole host of things that could just bring the whole house of cards down like it did during the subprime crisis. It'll happen again. It's just a matter of time. We cite the statistics. We cite the data here all the time. It's a house of cards, and it's a true travesty. America, the final chapters. Before I sign off, this weekend is Orthodox Easter, so to all my Greek friends and Orthodox friends out there, Christos Anesti, enjoy your Easter with your friends and family, and you'll catch me back here next week. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Kuraitis. Godspeed.